So today I'm talking to Richard Banks and Romy Bassi from FutureLearn about online course design, learner engagement, accessibility and diversity. So hi both, thanks so much for speaking to us today. To start, can you just tell us a bit about your background and role in online course design and development? Richard, do you want to start off?
Yeah, absolutely. My career started with student radio, I would say, actually, is where I really got started. When I was at the University of Warwick studying English literature, I got really heavily involved in student radio. And in my second and third year, I was applying left, right and centre for jobs at the BBC, as you do if you're interested in radio, which is how I landed a role working for BBC Online in about 2003. From there, I ended up being trained by the BBC Academy in all things digital media and in content production. So, you know, writing HTML, a little bit of CSS back in the day when content management systems were not really around yet. So kind of hand coding web pages for the BBC website. And there were some brilliant, brilliant minds working at the BBC at that time. So I picked up a real understanding of user experience, usability, accessibility, and how to create an engaging experience for users of the web. So I spent about 9 years at the BBC before I moved on, and I eventually joined FutureLearn at the beginning of its journey in January 2014, when I think we had run only 8 courses ever. I believe there's now over 15,000 course runs in our database. It's been a fast and steep growth curve. And I joined FutureLearn as part of the content team to help university partners make great courses for the platform. So along the way, I've had a really big involvement in designing what good looks like on FutureLearn. So helping to write the quality criteria to which all courses have to adhere. And then since about 2016, I've been leading a team that we call FutureLearn Studio. And FutureLearn Studio is a group of creatives and project managers who build courses in collaboration with partners. So we have learning designers, we have content and media specialists and project managers who, as long as we have an academic or a subject matter expert to work with, we can create a great course together. And so, yeah, I've been with FutureLearn for just over 7 years doing that kind of work.
Great, thanks. And Romy, do you want to tell us a bit more about that learning design role?
Yeah, so I guess you could say I sort of fell into online learning. I started working in education about 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago, as a temp doing general administration. And then I quickly started working with something called ILPs, individual learner plans, with a focus on target setting and reflection by the students, which then became an electronic ILP. And with my work with that, a lot was transferable to the VLE, the virtual learning environment. I guess you could say, although VLEs have been out for a while, online learning, its sort of adoption by education in the UK was still very much in its infancy, but I was very much hooked. I loved it. I really wanted my career to go in that direction. And after about 5 years in further education, I went on to higher education and started working as a distance learning developer, working exclusively with online courses. I've now been at FutureLearn for 9 months, working as a learning designer. So that basically involves working with our partners and clients to look at the structure of their courses, making sure the plan is set so that we can create a great learning experience before it goes into production.
So what impact do you think well-designed and really well-thought-out course materials have on kind of learner engagement and retention?
I guess as a learning designer, I might have a slight bias when answering this because a lot of the work that I do is around the planning and designing of courses, but I'll do my best to answer fairly anyway. I guess when we're doing anything, you know, in everyday life, even if it's sort of like baking a cake, you want to start with a decent plan. You need your ingredients. You need to know your measurements. If it's an assignment for something more academic, an assignment you're writing, you probably want to start with your plan and your draft. I think having a well thought out plan is essential for knowing where you want to go, but then it also helps with measuring success at the end. And within that, I guess, when you're planning, you need to have an idea of what your course is going to be about and, of course, who your students are going to be. And that helps with the engagement. I think it's slightly trickier, and I hope you'll forgive me for sort of sidestepping this question. It's slightly trickier to draw that correlation between engagement and retention because of what engagement might mean and how different organisations might track engagement. So an example I like to give is around clicks doesn't necessarily mean engagement, but a lot of the data we can pull out of virtual learning environments is about page visits and things like that. But if I could perhaps say that engagement helps encourage learners to be more motivated. So you might have people with different motivations on a course. Someone's motivated to do the course because they have to for work, or for it's part of a module for a program they're on. That's not necessarily engagement, but so you might retain people without having an engaging course, if that makes sense. What I would say is, if you flipped it on your head and said, if you don't have an engaging course, you're more likely to see a strong correlation between not retaining those students.
So I think when you're developing an online course, you are competing for your learners' attention. And as a teacher in a classroom or a training room setting, you've got a more captive audience in that traditional sense. But with online or distance learning, you're competing against myriad things that have been specifically designed to attract and to keep your learners' attention, whether that's whether it's Netflix or Candy Crush or Animal Crossing or TikTok. Those apps are designed with stickiness and retention in mind. So their number one metric is engagement time, and they'll use every trick in the book to steal the user's attention. You know, they've got push notifications and reward systems and peer-to-peer interactions and gamification techniques, and those are all tools that drive engagement and retention. So I think we have to think in the same way about designing an online course these days. And one of the best tools, I think, in your toolbox is storytelling. So at FutureLearn, we talk a lot about telling stories and the art of a good narrative. It's one of our pedagogic principles, because storytelling is one of the oldest forms of teaching, essentially. The oral traditions were, you know, how communities transferred knowledge and skills and ethics from one generation to the next without writing them down. And those ancient teachings took the form of, you know, myths and legends and parables. And what made those lessons memorable was the fact that they were delivered usually in a compelling story. And so there's a reason that the events of Homer's Iliad or the Odyssey or the morals of Aesop's fables stick in our minds and live on. And that's because at their heart, they're great stories. And I don't think teaching is any different. If you want to keep someone's attention and you want them to remember what you've been telling them, you've got to make it engaging and a compelling story to hear. So one of the ways that we do this is, for example, using case studies. And you can use case studies that unfold across the duration of a course. It could be like a real life case study or a fictional one, but it gives you that structure to hang learning activities off of as the course progresses. I'm a really big fan of using the hero's journey story archetype. So, you know, act one is setting the scene, providing context, discovering a problem that needs solving. And act two is setting out on a journey of exploration, of experimentation, and battling against that problem. And then act three is all about the resolution of the conflict and the aftermath, in which you can reflect on and everything you've learned. And if you play on that archetype and design a similar structure for your course, it's going to feel instantly familiar to your learners, and they'll instinctively want to follow along on that journey, because ultimately humans love a good story. And that goes back to Walter Fisher's theory of narrative paradigm. And also, by not jumping straight into act two, you're going to make sure that you get the difficulty, the learning curve correct. You know, you allow people to get comfortable before you hit them with the more challenging stuff. So I think we consistently find that by designing courses that have that clear, coherent, linear narrative, we do see learners progressing past the introductory steps more often than not, and then going on to complete assessments. Yeah, and I think once you've got that story worked out, you can then focus on making sure all of your content and all of your media assets in that course are as accessible and, you know, usable as they can be. You want to remove all friction from the experience as best you can. because anything that confuses or frustrates your learner has that potential to cause them to disengage and they may not come back. And if you want to learn more about, you know, making learning experiences frictionless, I still think that Steve Krug's book, Don't Make Me Think, which I think came out in about 2000, is still every bit as useful now as it was back then.
That's great. Yeah, that's such a valuable point about the storytelling, because, you know, if you're right, if learners are invested from the beginning, then it does feel like more of a kind of natural journey that they're invested in, and it doesn't feel like learning is a chore, takes that that effort away, and they're kind of hooked on it. How important do you think considering accessibility is when designing online courses?
So for me, accessibility, It's not about how important it is, because for me, accessibility is non-negotiable. It's absolutely mandatory. And you need to think about how you're going to make your course materials accessible and bake that into your approach from day one. Otherwise, it's like going to all of the trouble of building a house and then not putting any doors or windows on it. Because people need a way in. They need to be able to interact and engage with the thing that you're building. And not everyone has the same abilities, right? And you need to design for your least able learners. There's also a really clear legal obligation to make your courses accessible. So you've got to think about things like font size and readability, color contrast in graphics. You need to make sure that you're writing meaningful descriptive alt text on every single image. You need to, if you're making video content, you've got to provide subtitles and ideally a downloadable transcript. Often we kind of take for granted our fast Wi-Fi, but you also need to think about users on slow or unreliable broadband connections or even narrowband still in developing parts of the world. And so consider making lower res or lower bandwidth versions of media files that you maybe can make them downloadable for offline access. And then finally, it's important to think about what language your learners speak and whether they all have the same level of confidence in that language. And if not, can you provide translations?
Thanks. And Romy, what are your thoughts on accessibility?
Yeah, I mean, Richard's given a fairly comprehensive answer to that. I mean, on top of the fact that it's a legal requirement in the UK, I think it's worth probably adding to what Richard said is that there are added benefits. So if I pick the example of transcripts and subtitles for videos, we often think, you know, that's a benefit for someone with a hearing impairment. But actually, if you look at universal design principles, it's good for that as well, because if you've got a transcript that's useful for someone who perhaps has English as a second language, perhaps the speaker on the video has a regional accent which is difficult to understand for some learners and it's helpful for them, it might be that there's low bandwidth for the person in the country that they're studying in, so they can quickly read through it without having to download the whole video. So there are a number of extra benefits when looking at accessibility and some of the kind of guidelines around it. The other thing I'll add really is that you don't want the learning environment to get in the way of the learning. So thinking about accessibility from the beginning helps with that.
That's great. Yeah, all of these points are absolutely key to highlight. And yeah, I think that's really clear, and it's a really good point about baking it in from the beginning. So can you tell us a bit about kind of decolonizing the curriculum and ways to address diversity in course design?
Yeah, absolutely. This is key at the moment. Obviously, it's extremely topical with last year's Black Lives Matter movement coming to the forefront of, well, all around the world, really. And so we're very, very conscious of making our courses diverse and making sure that the representation in our courses is as broad as possible. And by that, I mean thinking really carefully about the people that you feature in your course. So if you're making videos, who are you filming? Is the kind of cast of characters that you're asking to contribute to your course, are they diverse in every sense of the word? Are they ethnically diverse? Do they come from different educational backgrounds? Are they based in different countries? And the reason that's important is because, especially if your course is going to be open and international, and so, you know, it's going to attract an international audience, learners want to feel that they are themselves represented in your course. they don't expect to see, you know, a sea of white male voices in your course, because that isn't how the world looks to them and to a lot of the world. So I think it's really important to think carefully about who you're approaching to write and to feature in your course materials, and be really careful not to present a monoculture. If it is an international course, you've really got to be sensitive to other people's cultural perspectives. So, you know, their interpretation or perspective on current and historical events is going to differ from your own, potentially. So you've got to be careful with your language and how you present the difference between empirical facts and versus, you know, opinion or commonly held beliefs, I think. So we're making a concerted effort when it comes to sort of decolonizing the curriculum by looking at the organizations that we partner with as well around the world. We're launching courses with organizations like the Black Curriculum at the moment, who do some really great work in the UK on that front.
Yeah, really good points. And yeah, that's the thing with online learning platforms, is the great thing that it's a global audience, but you definitely have to address that. And Romy, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've just hit the nail on the head there with the global audience that we're reaching. I think it's important that when learners are taking a course, that it feels like it's a course aimed at them. And however you approach that, so that might be through having speakers from different countries or, you know, different protected characteristics. But there's also diversity of thought, and including diversity there. So that might be due to cultural reasons, or it might be other reasons. But if there is diversity of thought, why wouldn't you include it in your course? Because it balances the opinion. You can use it as a stepping stone to start a debate and engage the learners further.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking about the actual kind of design approach, how important is it to use the kind of the chunking method when thinking about course content?
So there's two reasons I think that I can point to here. Firstly, because, as with anything, you need to design for the medium that you're intending your project to be delivered on. So you need to think about how people interact with the web and with apps if you're designing an online course these days. UX research from people like, you know, Nielsen Norman, who are leaders in this area, that's shown over many years that people rarely read web pages word by word in the way that they do like a magazine or a book. They tend to scan the page and pick out keywords, individual sort of headings and sentences, and make their own appraisal of what that article is going to be about before they sort of invest in reading it properly. And I think that has a lot to do with the way that people interact with digital technology and attention spans as well these days. I remember reading a book called The Shallows a long time ago that's all about that, and having to think about the way that people interact with the web should really guide the way that you design your content. So secondly, I think it's important to chunk material because that's what people expect of online learning. They expect it to be flexible and self-paced and bite-sized so that they can fit it around their lives, because that's everything that traditional classroom learning isn't. You know, you don't have to be somewhere at a particular time and engage with the material from, you know, 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. Or whenever the training starts and finishes. So that means you don't have to follow that paradigm with an online delivery of that learning experience. So by chunking things up into, you know, shorter articles or shorter videos, you're making it easier to digest. You're making it something that people can consume in smaller blocks of time. It might be when they're waiting for a train, they can do 10-15 minutes of their course and then put it down and pick it up later. I know that I think can share one kind of stat around what we've seen over the years on Future Learners. We always try and to encourage partner organizations that are making courses to keep their videos down to sort of around the 7 minute mark, ideally. And that's because when we looked at our data, we saw that beyond 7 minutes, not only do people, you know, stop watching that video, they're actually more likely to exit and end their learning session altogether. So, you know, it's really worth bearing that in mind when, you know, thinking about how to divide up your material.
Yeah, they're really good points. Yeah, we actually recommend 5 minutes or less to just keep it, you know, just really so that the attention isn't likely to fall away. But yeah, that's a really good point about being able to have a positive learning experience if you do make it up of those smaller kind of 10-minute, 15-minute chunks of learning. You want it to work well. Yeah, so Romy, what are your thoughts about this approach?
So I was going to make 2 points as well. One is a sort of general point about attention spans and, you know, the ability to retain information if materials are too long. No matter how good the flow of your course is, eventually learners are going to need a bit of time to have a break and reflect. And the chunking kind of allows you to build that in. But in contrast to Richard, I was going to draw the parallels with the kind of face-to-face environment. So if we think about sort of traditional school or university classes or courses, you know, you've got lessons, you've got seminars, and you've got lectures, which are broken down, which are a breakdown of the topic, which are a breakdown of the overall module. So there's already a breakdown. And even in the class itself, you might have a breakdown of tasks within there. So you're trying to vary the styles and chunk up what you've got in the lesson in order to do exactly that. And I think the educators who are working on an online course will almost certainly have some experience of face-to-face in the past and be doing this, but not necessarily have it at the forefront of their mind. And it's just reminding them they already do this, and it's about translating this to the online environment.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about it in that way, that you even if you're face-to-face, you are probably doing those maybe hour lessons in those smaller chunks. So yeah, it is just about translating that into the online space. So yeah, finally, what are your top tips, or do you have any advice for anyone who's kind of maybe new to the process of creating an online course or considering it?
I think, again, coming back to the fact that I'm a learning designer, I think that the planning is key, but the plan is never set in stone. So just being conscious that once you've done your plan, you can change it. Iteration is obviously an important part of that, because you should be learning as you're creating this course. So get your ideas down, get your plan down, work together, be open with each other, and don't be afraid to change your mind if things aren't working.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And Richard?
Yeah, I think I'd echo that and just add a couple of things. Firstly, don't be tempted to rush into picking up your camera or, you know, your recording device and starting to film or making media. I think too often people associate online learning with videos, and that doesn't have to be the case, and it certainly isn't a good idea to start making videos before you've really thought about what it is you're trying to achieve. And the other thing I would say is always allow time to road test the course with some genuine users, get their feedback and iterate based on their feedback well before, you know, the go live date is set. And there's nothing like actually putting your course in front of some genuine learners and then seeing the way that they interact with it for real to help you sort of learn where you've, you know, nailed what it is you're trying to achieve and where you might have missed the mark.
Thanks very much for your time today. And yeah, it's been really good talking to you. Thanks very much.